The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England. Now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Preventable dental problems land more than 800,000 Americans in emergency rooms each year. Often these ER episodes occur because people lack dental insurance. So they wait until the pain becomes unbearable. Then the emergency room docs do their best with pain relievers and antibiotics, actions everyone agrees are less effective and more expensive than early intervention at a dentist's office. These stories are repeated in New Hampshire as well, where an estimated 16,000 Granite Staters each year seek care for a dental emergency in the ER. And these numbers highlight a gap. While more Americans have medical coverage these days for the rest of their bodies, it's often not the same story when it comes to their teeth. Today in The Exchange, the dental divide, why so many have inadequate coverage, and why oral care is so separate from regular health policies. Let's hear from you, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests for the hour. Dr. Lisa Simon is with us, instructor in Harvard School of Dental Medicine's Department of Oral Health Policy and Epidemiology. Her research addresses barriers to oral health faced by low-income people. Dr. Simon, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And with me in studio, Dr. Peter Welnack, family dentist in Keene and the current president of the New Hampshire Dental Society. And Dr. Welnack, thank you for making the trip. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Well, I want to turn to you first, Dr. Simon, but hear from you too, Dr. Welnack. Dr. Simon, why are these two systems of health care and health insurance so separate and so different? As one headline writer put it, why don't we treat teeth like the rest of our bodies?
Well, it's a great question, and I would say that the answer is most certainly historical. So taking you back to the mid-1860s, when the idea of a dental school was first floated by a bunch of physicians in Baltimore, and the idea was, hey, dentistry seems fairly complicated. Perhaps we should train people to be very good at it. And they started a dental school as a result. And from there, all of a sudden, a dental school was something different than medical school, and the systems really started to diverge. Dating back to insurance, the idea of medical insurance first started in the early 20th century with groups of people, of employed people, trying to protect each other from these very, very large medical expenses. The idea being, if I'm hit by a bus tomorrow, my teacher friends are going to make sure I don't go bankrupt getting out of the hospital. Dental insurance doesn't show up until 20 or 30 years later as almost a perk for people in unions. So something that's nice to have, but certainly not necessary. And as a result, the expenses and the way we pay for these two things are very different. Medical insurance, at its base, is really this idea of protecting people from very, very large expenses. Dental insurance, instead, is not actually insurance against anything. It's more protection of preventive services so that hopefully you won't need these big expenses. But once you do, you're on your own.
It's almost a mirror image of each other then, Lisa, right?
Exactly. And in some ways, they can each learn from each other. For example, along with Obamacare, a big change in health insurance right now is how we cover preventive services to encourage people to use them. And that's something that physicians could take a lesson from dentists in.
And yet, you know, if you break your leg, you're probably pretty well covered by your insurance. If you break your tooth, Dr. Simon, you could be out many hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
Exactly. And the great paradox is that the people who really have the most dental need and really need these services are the ones that are least likely to be able to afford them.
Well, and Dr. Welnack, what do you think? Why are these systems so separate and should they be joined?
I think they are separate. They should be joined. But why? As Dr. Simon adequately pointed out, it's historical. I never could understand why it's okay for a person to lose a tooth, but they'll fight to the last degree to save a finger. We have 10 fingers. You know, can we get by with 9? Well, maybe. We should fight for every tooth.
Why do you think these, or how do you think these separate systems affect your patients? What sorts of stories do you hear from people?
The biggest thing that I hear is, I'd like to do the right thing. I want to do the best that I can for my health and for my body, or for my children's health and my children's body, but I just don't have the financial resources to do it. If I have insurance, as Dr. Simon pointed out, it's sort of a misnomer. It's a dental benefit. It's not insurance. It doesn't insure against anything. But so it covers cleanings pretty well, but it covers repairs for accidents not nearly so well. The people want to do the right thing. They just don't have enough money.
So you're having to make cases in that dental chair. You know, you say the best thing for you, Mrs. Jones, would be to have X, but it's not covered. It's going to cost you $5,000. So let's find a less adequate
We don't like to say
source.
Less adequate.
Well, another source of treatment that may not be as good.
Well, something that's acceptable to you. You know, we try not to make decisions for people. We offer suggestions. They're the ones that make the decisions. It's, you know, kind of informed consent. Here are the options. This would be the best. This is acceptable. This will get you by for a while. Hopefully your situation changes and we can preserve that option for you until you have you find the way to get it taken care of.
Let me remind our listeners that they can join us as well. The exchange number for you to jump into our conversation is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the system of dental health, why it's so different and so separate from regular medical care, and some calls now to join these two systems, given what we know about the link between oral health and the rest of our bodies. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, join us at 1-800-892-6477. Both of you, Dr. Simon first. So as I just alluded to, seems like we know a lot more these days about the connections between our teeth and the rest of our bodies. What more are we learning, Dr. Simon, about how trouble in the teeth affects everything else?
Absolutely. And more research is being done every day that's proving, perhaps intuitively, that our oral health is very important to the rest of our bodies. Some of the most significant links have been with heart disease, diabetes, preterm birth. So women who have periodontal disease are actually more likely to give birth to premature babies. There are also rates in people who are missing their teeth to lower levels in the blood of important vitamins and minerals, as well as depression and quality of life.
Is this just coming out now, Dr. Simon, or have we known this for a while?
I think more research is being done every day, and we're also finding more effective blood markers for different body changes. So, for example, while we've had some idea for a while that inflammatory illnesses like periodontitis and diabetes are connected, we're now able to find ways to measure this and also to assess whether treatment of one helps the other.
So, Dr. Welneck, is that a call, a rationale, a reason to join these two systems?
I think it is. You know, what we're seeing now is a bit of a convergence between health insurance and dental insurance, maybe spurred on by the Affordable Care Act, where some Tom Raffi will shoot me later on. But
he's going to join us later on.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, some medical insurers who also sell dental insurance are combining the two and giving discounts and premiums, because they know that if you have, for instance, diabetes, you're very, very much likely to have gum disease. But if your gum disease is controlled, it will also help keep your diabetes under control.
I see. So it keeps those costs down.
They're synergistic. You can reduce the cost of everything by combining them and treating them together.
And again, Tom Raffio is the president of Northeast Delta Dental, the state's biggest insurer. And we'll talk to him later. Also, someone who's been looking at oral access for low-income Granite Staters. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And both of you, let's go to the phones. And Kathleen's joining us from Peterborough. Hi, Kathleen. You're on The Exchange.
Oh, Laura, thank you very much. I have a comment and then a question out to your special guest. I pay $50 a month to my dentist to keep my cleanings, my exams, pay for my night guard, and this has been ongoing. I asked about getting in a plan, and they said, well, we have one from New Hampshire. That's all we have. How do we get our dentist to accept a plan that will at least pay some of our expenses? This gets mighty expensive month after month.
Well, so, Kathleen, you were told if you lived in a bigger state, there'd be more plans available? Is that
no,
it?
Just that my dentist only takes the one plan that's, I guess his name, whatever the plan is out of, I think it's out of Concord, is New Hampshire Dental, whatever
yeah,
it
Delta
is.
Delta Dental, probably.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's the only one, and they won't consider any others, and he's a really good dentist, but it leaves us on the end of just having ongoing, you know, major expense every month.
Sure. Dr. Welnack, to you, I mean, how much choice is there in the Granite State?
It depends upon what kind of insurance you're talking about. If you are talking about the health care exchange, if you're talking about the Affordable Care Act, you know, we've only had, to my knowledge, one insurance company that has qualified for that. But if you're talking about dental insurance, as we normally think of it, Delta Dental of New Hampshire here has by far and away the largest share in the state. But why doesn't her dentist, I think is really the question, why doesn't her dentist accept other insurances? It's burdensome to a business. That's number one. Number two, the reimbursement rates are low. So, you know, if you're going to try to go where there's the least resistance, you work with things that work well. So if Delta Dental works really well for you, you stick with that one. If Cigna doesn't work so well or Aetna doesn't work so well, the administrative burden is costly and time-consuming. You chew up administrative costs and that, then you're less likely to work with them.
The administrative costs is, I'm sure you know, one reason why traditional medical doctors have been going away from being solo practitioners to these group practices. Nowadays, gosh, I think almost every doctor's office in Concord is under Concord Hospital, and the idea of sharing administrative costs is a reason for that. Do dentists want to go that route? I mean, you might share some administrative costs. On the other hand, you wouldn't be your own solo practitioner anymore. You'd be working for somebody else.
Well, you know, this being the Granite State and live free or die, I think that most dentists would like to work on their own. Right now, about 75-78% of dentists are self-employed solo dentists practicing alone.
The way doctors used to be.
That's changing. You know, whether it's for the good or for the bad, that'll play out.
Okay.
But it is changing, and we are going the way that doctors are going. The statistics bear that out.
All right. We'll pick up that thread. And your question, Kathleen, about the Affordable Care Act as well in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the dental divide, why so many Americans have inadequate dental insurance, and why oral care is so separate from regular health policies. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Dr. Peter Welnack is with me in studio, family dentist in Keene, current president of the New Hampshire Dental Society. Dr. Lisa Simon joins us from Cambridge. She's an instructor in Harvard School of Dental Medicine's Department of Oral Health Policy. And Dr. Simon, let's pick up on the Affordable Care Act. We've heard so much about how this has changed the healthcare field, the health insurance field. How much has it affected the dental field?
Unfortunately, not that much. So the Affordable Care Act has been absolutely phenomenal, especially in states that have chosen to expand Medicaid to really help especially poor adults achieve medical care. But in dental care, there's actually no requirements within the Affordable Care Act that say that states need to provide dental care for these people or that plans need to offer it. So the benefits we're seeing in oral health are for populations that are kind of getting it through confusing means. So, for example, young 20-somethings who are being able to stay on their parents' insurance, we're seeing them visit the dentist a little bit more. And in states that are both expanding Medicaid and whose Medicaid offers some dental care, we're seeing a little bit of benefit as well. But for example, in New Hampshire, Medicaid for adults doesn't cover any dental care except for emergency extractions. So even if people are getting more Medicaid enrollment, they're not really seeing a dental benefit, and we're still going to see them in the emergency room instead.
So for kids, we've done pretty well, though, right? Right, Dr. Simon? In terms of Medicaid.
In terms of Medicaid, we've done phenomenally well across the state. There are still some huge gaps, and a lot of this is because many dentists in private practice don't accept Medicaid. But by federal law, all children in Medicaid are required to have a comprehensive dental benefit. So for children, and that includes people under 21, we're seeing some great coverage of services. In New Hampshire, that can even include braces for some children.
Wow. So what about the insurance exchanges, Dr. Simon, where people can shop for coverage, get subsidies to help pay for it? These are folks who, you know, may struggle to pay for insurance on their own, but make too much money to qualify for expanded Medicaid. So where does dental coverage fit in there?
That's a great question. So sometimes these different plans can offer dental insurance. But again, dental insurance isn't really insurance, and it's more a benefit or an incentive. So for people who are looking for the lowest bottom line on their plan, this probably isn't something they're going to go for any more than they were before.
We hear a lot about the reimbursement rates, Dr. Welnack, and how even if a kid does have Medicaid, the reimbursement rate for you guys is so low that some dentists can't take any more Medicaid patients. Can you tell us how that works in your practice and how dentists around the state sort that out?
If a private dentist in private practice accepts a Medicaid patient, pretty much it's a losing money proposition for him. The reimbursement is not enough to cover the cost of that service. So we do it sort of as a pro bono kind of thing. And I'm not sure how many dentists in New Hampshire do that, but I think it's somewhere around half.
Somewhere around half of dentists take Medicaid patients.
Yeah, which is pretty good considering that there's no reimbursement. There's no incentive to make money on it. Everybody has to sort that out themselves. I wish that that reimbursement rate were higher.
What is it? Is it 50 cents on the dollar?
I don't know. I honestly don't know what it is right now in terms of, you know, whether it's 40% or 50% or 60%. It differs from medicine where the reimbursement rate is much higher, about 80%. So that's one of the problems. In talking to Dr. Peg Snow, the recent head of Medicaid, dental Medicaid in New Hampshire, she said that there are three things that make for a successful program. One is you have to have a robust provider network. You have to have the dentist to accept it. But to get that provider network to be robust, you have to decrease the administrative burden. And the third thing is you have to have the patients sort of asking and demanding for it. You need an educational background in the population where they're looking for help. So it's a complex issue. I think that, you know, what could be done is, sure, every dentist could accept a few Medicaid patients, wouldn't hurt us. But they could decrease the administrative burden and increase the reimbursement. And then maybe through programs like Dr. Simon has been involved in, get the word out and get people really to value dental care a little bit more and get them into the offices.
So there's no requirement that dentists take Medicaid patients?
No requirement whatsoever.
You know, as you know, regular docs, you know, struggle with this as well. And I was wondering, as I was getting ready for the show, I thought, okay, regular doctors probably have the same struggle too. The reimbursement rates aren't 100%. There's a bit of a loss with taking care of Medicaid patients. So how do they do it better than you guys do it?
My understanding is that in medicine, and I'm not a physician, so I don't really know. I'm not intimate with their business plans. You have to have a mix of patients. You have to have some full paying. You have to have some insurance. You need to have some Medicaid. But it takes that mixture so that you can have a robust practice. In dentistry, you would need many, many more full fee paying customers in order to be able to balance the Medicaid because the reimbursement's so low.
Is this partly what we talked about before, Dr. Welnack, that you guys tend to be solo practitioners, a small office, so taking on a lot of Medicaid cases would impact your small business more than it might affect a doc who is associated with a Concord hospital or a, you know, a CMC or an Elliott
and
hospital?
I think they may have better ways to share that cost or shift that cost. You know, in dentistry, it's pretty small business. You know, I'm a solo dentist and I have 7 employees. It's a small operation.
Is that an argument for moving towards that more consolidated system that we talked about before?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that the administrative burden doesn't go up and the total cost of dental care doesn't go up as a result of that.
Did you want to jump in, Dr. Simon?
Yeah, I did. So first, just to give some background information, Dr. Welnack, there are actually about 388 dentists in New Hampshire who are accepting Medicaid. But the important thing to understand is that there's no limit or no minimum to how many patients these people are accepting. So if a dentist sees one Medicaid patient in their office every year, they're counting the same as someone who sees entirely Medicaid patients. And in addition, we've seen that things other than overhead and reimbursement actually really do affect whether dentists accept Medicaid. And in fact, one of the most inspiring studies I've seen shows that dentists who accept Medicaid actually are more altruistic in general. So we're really seeing that if we perhaps change the philosophy behind dentistry and how we're serving our patients, that can make a difference also. And Laura, to your point about how we're seeing changes in medical insurance to help support poor populations, one big trend that's especially prominent in the Affordable Care Act is this idea of accountable care organizations. And basically what that says is instead of paying you for each thing I do, if I'm an insurance company, I'm going to give the physicians or the group of physicians a big chunk of money to say, keep this person healthy. If you manage to keep them healthy, whatever you didn't spend doing that, you get to keep. If you spend too much, then you're going to have to bite the bullet and pay for that. Especially in dentistry, I think this makes perfect sense because in the conventional model, if you're my patient, I make more money if you have more cavities. Whereas if we change to a system where I'm all of a sudden incentivized to keep you healthy, not only does that align our interests better, but it also essentially pays me to do the things I would love to be able to do for my patients, such as educate them, call them on the phone to see how they're doing, provide community services like fluoride varnish application. So it really changes the model so that as a dentist, I'm also benefiting from focusing on prevention.
Again, today in The Exchange, we're looking at the dental divide, why so many Americans lack decent dental insurance and dental care, and the impact overall on their health, as well as our health care system. We're hearing about some of the ideas and changes going on. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We go now to Eleanor Jaffe. She's with the Carsey School of Public Policy at UNH. Eleanor is co-author of the recent report, Oral Health Care Access in New Hampshire. And Eleanor, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, we've touched on some of the things that you guys bring up on your report, but let's touch on a little bit more and start with the good news. Eleanor, from your report, looks like New Hampshire kids are doing pretty well in terms of access to oral health. Why is that?
Yeah, that's right. New Hampshire is doing very well relative to national numbers. About 85% of New Hampshire kids are reported to get dental visits compared with about 77% nationally. And about 82% are reported to be in good or excellent oral health compared with 71% nationally. And one of the reasons for this is that New Hampshire is strongly supporting dental sealant programs. Dental sealants are preventive coatings that can prevent tooth decay. And the state is supporting programs that bring sealant applications to high-need schools. And that's the reason for the Pew Charitable Trust A grade for the use of sealants among kids. So we are doing pretty well statewide, but one of the key points in the report is really that there's a lot of variation around the state and regions where access and oral health aren't doing quite as well.
Give us a little bit more there. Definitely varies by county to county.
Yep, county to county, and it's kind of different for different age groups. So looking at children statewide, about a third, 35.4% have evidence of tooth decay among kids, and in Coos County, it's over half. So this is a region where we're really seeing an intersection of both a high poverty rate as well as widely distributed dental practices, which there aren't that many practices there, which makes sense because the population is smaller. But like the population, the dental practices are so widely distributed that there are very long distances for people to get to the dentist. And so we're seeing you know, these sorts of outcomes. We're seeing less utilization of care and poorer outcomes. So that's among adults, too. About 73% of adults statewide have visited a dentist within the past year, and that does compare really well nationally. But in COAS, it's just over half, about 55%.
Wow, it's not very much.
Not very much, right. And statewide, about 1 in 10 adults have gone more than 5 years without a dental visit. And in COAS, that's about 1 in 5. So that's more than 5 years with no dental visits at all.
Well, and to your point, Eleanor, about, you know, access varying county by county, here's an email from Peg that just came in. She says, many children, families, seniors have trouble getting dental care because there aren't dentists in their communities, and they don't have the paid time off or transportation to reach dentists. Peg says there have been efforts to enable a mid-level dental provider, a hygienist with advanced education and training, a similar concept to nurse practitioners. These professionals can act as dental extenders. Peg said there has been resistance to this idea from many in the dental community, even though it has proved successful in other states or counties. Do your panel think that this is something New Hampshire could try? Okay, and I remember this has come up in the legislature before, so I want to ask everybody about this. To you first, Dr. Simon, I have heard about these paraprofessionals, sort of super hygienists. How does this work?
Well, I love your term super hygienists. we usually call them mid-level providers, and nurse practitioners are a fantastic comparison. So we call them dental therapists, dental hygienist therapists, and in some countries are actually called dental nurses. And I say some countries because this sort of mid-level provider model has been thriving in 54 countries, including Australia and New Zealand. And here in our own country, it actually works fantastically well in both Alaska and Minnesota. So these are folks who would, with supervision from a dentist, be able to provide basic dental care, things like preventive measures, as well as fillings and even extracting baby teeth. And studies in both Alaska and Minnesota have shown that not only are these providers fantastic technically and provide care that's at the same quality as a dentist, they also provide huge amounts of dental savings. So for places that work with many Medicaid populations, we could be seeing an opportunity to actually allow people to break even doing so.
Now, Dr. Simon, from what I understand, only a couple states do this, right? Minnesota, Alaska.
And Maine is the most recent addition
yes.
to that.
Yeah. And Ellen, I want to get you in too. But Dr. Welneck, I know dentists have concerns about this.
We do have concerns. I would challenge a lot of that information as being half factually correct. The dental therapists that are out there, by and large, are not super hygienists. They can do some of the things that hygiene students or hygienists can do. To my knowledge, and I'm not an expert in this field, the only school that you can get an education in is the University of Minnesota. It offers a master's level program. You have to have a college degree and then go on to a master's program. It's a far different animal than what's being proposed here in New Hampshire. It's just a different thing. In Alaska, they have, I don't even know much about that. It's such a funny state. It's you know, you have to fly places.
Yeah, we think New Hampshire's rural.
Yeah, that's really out there. And when you compare it, I've seen statistics like 54 countries in the world. I don't think that the care or the level of oral health in those other 54 countries are equal to what we have here in the United States. So the position that I think I would have and the New Hampshire Dental Society would have is we need one level of very high, very good oral health care in the United States. We don't want to create a two-tiered or three-tiered or four-tiered system. We want one level of care at the highest level. We are espousing the best care, not a discount or not a lesser or a different care.
And yet, as we've talked, Dr. Welneck, so many people don't have any care at all. They might be okay with, you know,
I think the difference is they need to select for it, and it should not be put out by the dental society or the population. You know, you don't most people, when they see a doctor, they want to see the doctor. The doctor determines if it's something that's appropriate for the nurse practitioner or the physician's assistant. And that's kind of what the Dental Society is saying. Not that we can't work with paraprofessionals. We have paraprofessionals right now. We just want to make sure that the person is screened by somebody who's truly well-trained, understands pathology, has the level of education to maybe not miss a cancer or one of these other things, and then get to the appropriate level of care. So I don't do cleanings in my office. I have hygienists who do that. They are fantastic. They do a much better job than I would do. It's a division of labor, but we do the diagnosis first, and then we provide the treatment. We don't treat and then say, gosh, maybe this wasn't the right thing to do.
Well, and one more question for you on this, and then I'll go back to you. Eleanor, we could probably talk for a whole hour just about this one issue, but since it's come up, isn't there a sort of middle ground here, Dr. Welneck? I think I read about this where maybe you have a hygienist, a highly trained hygienist, a super hygienist, whatever you want to call that person, you know, working in the North Country or wherever, but that person is linked to a dentist. So the minute, you know, she or he sees something that looks fishy, he or she refers them to you.
Yeah.
Is that a middle ground here?
You know, are you talking teledentistry or, I mean, I'm not sure what that animal is. I think there's always, you know, the remoteness of certain populations in certain areas makes it difficult. I think that we want to get people out there. We're all about promoting oral health care. We just want to make sure that if somebody gets involved in an extraction and they're in the middle of the North Country and what was a simple extraction becomes a more serious matter, now you better have the level of training and understanding of the whole body systems to be able to keep that patient out of a very serious problem.
Eleanor Jaffe, we just have a little bit of time left with you. One of the things in your report that you said at the very end is we need more data. There's not a lot of great data on oral health. What else do you need to know?
Well, something that Dr. Simon brought up is it's really difficult to pin down how many providers are accepting Medicaid patients at any time. And as much of an issue as that is for researchers, I'm sure it's also an issue for patients who are seeking care.
Sure, they need to know where to go.
Right, so I would start there.
Well, and Eleanor, we'll put a link to your report on our website, and we thank you very much for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Eleanor Jaffe. Again, she's an evaluation research associate at the Carsey School of Public Policy. We'll put her report on oral health care access on our website, nhpr.org. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the dental divide. We're looking at why oral care is so separate, so different, and often so expensive compared to regular health policies. Also, why so many Granite Staters have inadequate coverage or no coverage at all when it comes to their teeth. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Lisa Simon is with us, instructor in Harvard School of Dental Medicine's Department of Oral Health Policy and Epidemiology. And Dr. Peter Welneck, family dentist in Keene, current president of the New Hampshire Dental Society. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And Francine joins us on the line. Hi, Francine. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi there. I'm calling from the North Country Health Consortium. We're an independent nonprofit, and we run the Molar Express. It's a mobile public health dental clinic in northern New Hampshire in Co-op County, those numbers that you were quoting. And I just wanted to offer a comment about solutions to access to care. We work a lot with health centers in our area, hospitals, to fund care for adults identified in dire need, and then ultimately educate and then provide that comprehensive dental care. We work with a dentist, so we have a full team. The thing is, it's not covered financially. We have to cobble together these funding sources through foundations, these hospitals, and then we can only reach a small number.
It's very frustrating, Francine.
Yeah.
The Molar Express, by the way, congratulations on the name. That's great. So you're a nonprofit. You're sort of a mobile dental care unit. You travel around serving underserved areas with a full outfit of, you know, dentists, hygienists, and the works. Is that right?
We do. Only we set up in the schools and in nursing homes or in health centers, as opposed to a big van. This allows us to have, we have a lot of travel to do here, difficult roads, the snow, so we make sure that we can get to where we need to go.
And in terms of payment, you don't charge people. You are a nonprofit, so you somehow figure it out.
We do charge Medicaid, and we serve a lot of kids, over 450 a year, multiple times a year. But the adults are left in the dark.
Yeah. All right. And as we talked earlier, Dr. Simon, Medicaid does not, in most cases, offer traditional dental coverage for adults in most states. Is that right, Dr. Simon? Let's just reiterate that.
Yeah. 50% of states that aren't providing anything. The problem is that it really depends on the state. In New Hampshire, we're seeing absolutely nothing. So like the wonderful folks running the Molar Express are seeing, we see adults really suffering from preventable dental disease. And I would say, however, that Medicaid is still paying for the results of this dental pain and this lack of dental care. And we're paying for it in the emergency rooms where we're giving people care but not cure.
Yeah, that's what you talked about earlier, right, Dr. Welnack?
Yeah, correct. You know, most of the time you go into the emergency room, they're not trained in dental procedures. So you have a toothache, you get an antibiotic and pain medicine, and you're told to go see a dentist. And too often that doesn't happen. So it results in a repeat visit because the process just repeats itself. Dr. Simon is right. They're not getting care.
And as both of you said earlier, eventually those problems leak into, if I could put it that way, the rest of the body through diabetes or heart disease.
Oh, sure. Can you imagine? What are you going to eat if you have a toothache?
Yeah.
You're not going to be eating green vegetables.
Well, there were some heartbreaking stories in some of the pieces I looked at before the show of kids saying, I want to eat an apple, but I can't.
Yeah.
It hurts too much.
Isn't that
heartbreaking?
We have to change that.
Yeah,
that's definite.
Well, and speaking of, you know, the coverage outside the private system, we've talked a lot about Medicaid. But here's an email about Medicare. This is the system that covers older adults. This person says, oh, let's see if I can find that email. It's about Medicare. A lot of emails coming in. Here we go. This is from Frank. He says that a question about the history of the separation of medical and dental care. Frank says, isn't it true that the American Dental Association resisted / fought against the inclusion of dental benefits in Medicare in the 1960s and more recently in the Affordable Care Act for adults? Frank, thank you for that email. And a couple questions there. First, to you, Dr. Simon, Medicare does not cover dental at all?
Well, thank you so much to the person who sent that email in. It's a very important point. And it's true that Medicare does not cover any dental coverage at all. In fact, there's a small loophole that allows people who are hospitalized for other reasons to have some teeth extracted if medically necessary. But we're talking a drop in the bucket compared to the about $700 that a senior citizen in the United States spends on dentistry each year. And from a historical perspective, we are looking at the American Dental Association being a big factor in why that happened, dating all the way back to 1965 and continuing until now. But on a hopeful point, I also want to point out that in 1965, the American Dental Association wasn't alone in opposing Medicare. The American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, and a lot of other medical groups were also pretty against the idea. But if you look at them 10 years later, a lot of polls of physicians showed that they were very satisfied cooperating with Medicare. So I think that as we focus on an aging population and a lot more power going into Medicaid and Medicare and decision makers, I think I see the potential for dentists to become part of that happy majority in the future.
Well, and Dr. Welnack, why doesn't Medicare cover dental, given that this is a time when your teeth especially tend to break down after years of use?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, as we get older, our problems seem to compound and get bigger and more. And I think the short answer is money. And I think the answer to that is call your politicians.
It's the reimbursement problem all over again.
Yeah, it's the reimbursement problem all over again. I think the dentist would love it. Absolutely just go ape if we could get some sort of inclusion. You know, we're in support of having funding for Medicare. In New Hampshire, there's no reimbursement for adult Medicaid. So both of those adult populations are lacking.
So big swaths of the adult population here.
The more people that we can get into good oral health, the happier the whole profession is going to be. We support that.
And again, the question is, though, that regular docs, and pardon the use of the term, they see Medicare and Medicaid patients. So your average person listening might go, well, my regular doc takes a hit every time he sees me because I'm on Medicaid or Medicare. So why can't you?
You know, again, because I run a business, I would be out of business and I wouldn't be able to see anybody, even those who can afford to pay for it. So I have to maintain a healthy – you know, your hospitals are going broke, but they get reimbursed from the federal government. I don't get reimbursement from the federal government, so I have to make my own way. In a way, I'm a capitalist but or a businessman, but if I don't get paid, I can't be out there. I can't pay my employees. I can't pay my overhead. I shut down and nobody gets care. So, you know, it's a problem we need to solve. I think the Affordable Care Act is the in. And, you know, many of the problems that we're talking about today, there are solutions out there, and we're making progress on these solutions. The amount of people who are in harm's way is decreasing it by percentage. It's going down. So we are making progress. We have the Sealant program. We have the Molar Express. We have federally qualified health care centers. And those are all increasing. There are more low-income centers that treat people in New Hampshire. I think we've added two since 2010. I think we've got two more in the works. And I'm not sure that counts Earl Simpson in the St. Paul's program. Who's a mobile clinic. They'll go anywhere and fix people's teeth for little or no money. There are solutions out there. We are making progress. We've got some traction. We need to follow it. We need to continue doing what we're doing. And where we identify a niche that's not being met, we'll find a problem. We'll find a solution for that problem.
We've talked a lot about insurance this hour, and joining us now on the phone is Tom Raffio. He's president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. And Tom, thanks a lot for your time. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Hey, Laura, I missed you at the Sprint Triathlon last week.
Well, and your ears must have been burning because insurance keeps coming up. So here's the big question for you, Tom. There's growing attention to the idea that, you know, more people have access to medical insurance, but not so much to dental insurance, that these systems are very separate, and more medical research is showing us that everything's connected. Obviously, the health of your teeth and your gums is connected to everything else. What do you think about why these systems are so separate and whether they should be integrated?
Well, as Peter, by the way, Dr. Welneck used to be the chair of Delta Dental Clinic of New Hampshire, so he knows that I've been saying this for 20 years, but I end every speech with the mouth is part of the body, and you can't have good overall health without good oral health. So we agree that we have to have that medical-dental connection. I just think historically group-based benefits through the employer started with medical during World War II, and it started with just medical. And it wasn't really until the 70s and 80s where group dental insurance, in the beginnings of Delta Dentals, where dental came into fruition. And to this day in New Hampshire, only 2/3 of the population has dental coverage. And that's unfortunate because, and Peter knows this, if you have some form of dental coverage, you know, 70 to 90% of that population will go to the dentist at least once a year. If you don't have dental coverage, it's something like less than 30%. And if you don't go to the dentist, you're going to have, you know, your oral health isn't going to be optimal for sure. So we're working on that integration.
What would that look like, Tom?
Well, we, you know, for example, we're trying to partner with, you know, Harvard Pilgrim. So, for example, if we can get a medical carrier to cooperate with us, we can coordinate the claims database so we can explain to employers that if they have dental coverage, ultimately there'll be the medical claims on, you'd referenced diabetes and heart stuff. There's all sorts of studies out there which show that if you take care of your teeth on the medical side, your claim costs will be less. So as we convince employers that if their employees have good oral coverage, that you'll actually save on the medical side, I think it will happen over time for sure.
Did you want to jump in, Dr. Welneck, real
sure.
quick?
I know from working with Delta Dental that there is no lack of effort on Tom's part or Delta Dental's part in trying to extend coverage for every single citizen of the state of New Hampshire and the tri-state area. They do a phenomenal job. They will go out and create plans so that it fits the employer's needs. They are the foremost company in this. They're second to none.
And thanks, Pete. And we also, for example, the Molar Express was referenced. As Pete knows, we have a foundation. We fund the Molar Express. We fund all sorts of other clinics and so forth for the underserved population, because that's our mission. We're a 501c4. We don't have to make a lot of money. We really want to spread the rural health care. And the other thing we did was we made a huge investment to get onto the public exchange, and over 2,400 citizens of New Hampshire have purchased dental coverage through the because of the Affordable Care Act on the public exchange. We don't make any money on it. It's barely a break-even proposition, and we know through our studies that most of those 2,400 people did not have coverage before. So if you look at it, those 2,400 people are now going to the dentist when they didn't go before. And we also created a private exchange called DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. We have about 9,000 people who individually have purchased on our private exchange as well. And again, we don't make any money on it because it's self-selecting. If you're going to buy dental insurance, you're going to use it. So we barely make money. But it's really sensitive to the rural health mission. So we do well, try to broaden that.
Tom, sorry to jump in, but I got a couple people who actually want to ask you some questions.
Sure.
And here's an email from Jay in Manchester who says, as a millennial living for several years without the financial wherewithal to afford much needed dental care, I was very excited when I recently started a new position that is relatively low paying but does offer dental benefits through Delta Dental. I was disappointed to find, however, that my plan offers very little help for the work I need done. In retrospect, I would not have enrolled in the program. I'd rather keep the money I pay each month for other expenses. Jay says, I find myself wondering what is the correct way to get dental care for someone in my position. Right now, it seems like the only way for me to take care of my teeth is to wait until I get a significant pay raise, a new job, or some other unlikely windfall. In the meantime, my teeth get worse. This is the surprise factor, Tom, for a lot of folks, myself included. You know, dental coverage is great when you just need your teeth cleaned, but once it's a problem, you are reaching deep into your wallet. Why does it seem so scanty?
Well, actually, we have a new program, Health Rural Wellness. We want people to go to the dentist, and I think if you get your cleanings, and as Peter knows, it's not necessarily twice a year. It could be three times a year or once a year. It'll prevent those bigger things later, but that's the whole point of dental insurance. All of us, I'm in my 50s, every 4 or 5 years I'm going to need a crown, and that's when, in fact, dental insurance does kick in. So we
But it doesn't kick in a whole lot. You end up pulling a lot out of your pocket.
Well, it's enough that we know that when, and Peter knows this too, when you have Delta Dental coverage, you'll get into the chair, and yes, you might have to pay $500 or $600 of a $1,300 crown, but half of it is being paid. And it's just really by nature as we also have to stay in business. We don't have to make a lot of money, as I said, but we also have to stay in business. So obviously, if someone's going to use the dental coverage, we have to make sure the premiums reflect that. We've been fortunate. A lot of dentists have been willing to accept a little less so that we now, on the exchange, you can get a really good dental program for like $25 to $35 per month to get you into the chair. And, yeah, you'll have to pay when you need that big stuff like a crown, you will have to pay half of it, but at least you're getting it done. You're not writing a check. Most people can't write a check for $1,300. And if Delta's paying half of it, I think that's actually a good thing.
Lisa Simon, do you want to jump in here too? The idea that, you know, dental insurance is different from medical insurance. And Tom's explaining that, yeah, it's expensive, but it's better than what you would pay if you're paying full freight.
And actually, I think one thing I'd really like to do is just try and give some productive suggestions to the letter writer. So as a millennial, he's actually the group that we see most often coming to emergency rooms because they can't go to the dentist. And given that emergency room dental visits make up 3.5% of all ED visits in the state, we're talking about a huge amount of people. So in terms of the letter writer, I really sympathize with this plight. It's very frustrating. One suggestion I would have would be to look at federally qualified health centers. These often have dental clinics with a sliding scale based on income. So we might be able to find care that's a little bit more affordable there. One other thing is that it's important to, if you're going to a private practice dentist, be very open about your finances. And often, I'm sure Dr. Wellnack can attest, dentists are willing to negotiate or suggest options that are a little bit less expensive. So for example, while often a tooth that's very broken down or decayed does need a crown, we can sometimes make do with something like a very large silver filling as a replacement.
And did you want to jump in real quick there, Dr. Wellnack?
Sure. The disparity between medical care and dental insurance. I buy my own medical insurance. I pay $1,200 per month for a $5,000 deductible plan. Tom is selling dental insurance for $25 to $30 a month. That's a huge difference.
Well, all of you, I think we could go on for another hour on this, but we will close it out here. Tom Raffio, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Good hearing from you, Peter, as well.
That's Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. Dr. Lisa Simon, thank you also for being with us.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Pleasure speaking with you guys.
That's Dr. Lisa Simon, instructor in Harvard's School of Dental Medicine's Department of Oral Health Policy and Epidemiology. And Dr. Peter Welnack, I'll let you get back to your patients in Keene.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Peter Welnack, he's a family dentist in Keene and current president of the New Hampshire Dental Society. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our intern is Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.